here at Quinnipiac. I want to wish Vesta Gadarz a happy birthday. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next, Positively Revolting, Ani Takes Your Calls. At 9, One Land Many Voices talks about the Freedom Flotilla to Gaza, and at 10, Valley Views talks to the program manager at the Edible Corvallis Initiative about environmental stewardship. At 10:15 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and at 11, it's Pacific Underground, interviews, documentaries, and real-time coverage of issues affecting Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Northwest. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
Tune in on Thursday, August 31st at 8 p.m. to celebrate the queer programmers and the queer community of KBOO as part of our 50th anniversary. Emma Lugo of Transpositive will host this special on-air program. You can join us that night at the Queer Community Open House here at KBOO at 20 Southeast Avenue from 7 to 10 p.m. on August 31st. More information about the Queer Community Open House and anniversary programming is available at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the August Amzi After Dark, featuring Insexuality, Ultrasonic Love Songs, and Death Dances from the Panamanian Rainforest on Wednesday, August 29th at 7:30 p.m. at Amzi in Portland. What does the world sound like to an insect or a bat? You can find out by exploring the insect music you've never heard before in surround sound under the Panamanian stars. Again, that's Amzi After Dark, featuring Insexuality, Ultrasonic Love Songs, and Death Dances from the Panamanian Rainforest on Wednesday, August 29th at 7:30 p.m. at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, 1945 Southeast Water Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought, tell the world how you cast your vote. They break our legs and we say thank you with the oppressed creature.
And good morning, good morning. The time is almost 4 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO, your community radio station, and this is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani. I'll be your host this week. And, my God, what a week it has been. I am here this morning hoping to talk to you about some of the goings-on, some of the news, news from this week really has just been, well, like most weeks in the last couple of years, horrifying. And there is so much to talk about, so let's get going. One thing that has really caught the attention and should be catching more attention this week is a historic prison strike. It is really important to talk about what is happening in the prisons. Many of the prisons are actually owned and operated by private for-profit corporations. And that is a growth industry because, in fact, the U.S. has incarcerated nearly 2.5 million people. It's about 2.3 incarcerated folks right now. And then, of course, all of the people who are caught in the criminally unjust system that have either, you know, that are on parole or early release programs, transitional programs, etc. So it's nearly 2.5 million people behind bars in the States. That is, in fact, the largest prison population anywhere. And we know that this actually grossly affects communities of color more than white communities. And we know also that it affects the poor more than the rich, right? And so always looking at prison populations through those lenses and what prisons actually mean in this country. I mean, a form of social control where we criminalize being houseless, where we criminalize poverty issues, where we criminalize black and brown skin. What does that mean? And so looking at prison issues, like the fact that prison labor is forced and paid very little cents on the to the hour. You know, we were hearing reports of incarcerated people being paid under 20 cents an hour to provide essential services to the prisons themselves. And again, then having much of that meager pay kept for purposes of restitution. So looking at what's going on in the prisons is a really important issue. And we see that on the 21st, there were protests breaking out, prisoner strikes breaking out throughout the area. And so that's actually, there are wonderful articles about that in The Guardian. Also, Democracy Now! Had some good coverage of that. But that definitely is a story that needs to be talked about more. And so we are here this morning to help to talk about it. And so when the prisoner strike is taking place, also there has been echoes of solidarity strikes in Tacoma. And that's at the Northwest Detention Center, the ICE Detention Center in Tacoma. Immigrant rights advocates say that over 200 immigrants that have been detained at the Northwest Detention Center launched a hunger strike and work stoppage last Tuesday as a part of the nationwide prison strike. The strikers talked about solidarity. They said, "We are taking part in a hunger strike nationwide, demanding change and closure of the ICE detention centers. We are acting with solidarity for all people who are being detained wrongfully and stand together to help support all those women who have been separated from their children and to stop all the family separations happening today. For a lot of us are also being separated and we have U.S. citizen children." So acts of solidarity breaking out amongst really some of the most marginalized communities in the country, and that would be communities of detained people. So now also looking at communities of detained people, there was an incident last week that happened in Texas, and that was reports that men who had been recently reunited with their sons at an ICE detention center and being held in, quote, family detention in Texas Apparently, some of the detention center operators heard that some of the men were planning on nonviolent protests of the conditions that they were being held in, and the fact that they were being held at all, as of course these people have actually committed no crimes. They're just detained for crossing the border without papers, and so there they are detained. And suddenly last week, armed guards, reports had upwards of 60 armed guards suddenly coming into the detention center in Karnes County, Texas, and forcibly removing many of the men and taking them to another detention center where they were not told what was going on. Several men apparently had signed deportation papers that they were told were actually paperwork to actually be reunited with their kids. It was a form of psychological torture for both the men and their sons. The sons were not told anything. The men were not told anything. And many of the many of the kids are under 10. And to think that this is basically retaliation for what? For planning to speak out a bit about their conditions. This is not acceptable. And again, we must speak out loudly about how immigrants are treated in this country, are being treated right now. And of course, we know that we still have nearly 1,000 kids separated from parents and not a clear plan of reuniting them. Let us not forget that story, which, you know, shocked our conscience back in May, but May seems like such a long time ago. It's really important not to lose the sense of urgency around that story as we see so many other stories unveiling right before our eyes. So there are so many other things to talk about. I have a fairly long list, but I'd also love to hear from you. What do you have to talk about this morning? And I got to say, how are you practicing solidarity? I was really taken by the stories of solidarity around the prison strike, knowing that the people that are involved in the prison strike are risking so much to support each other, to support other detained and incarcerated people around the country, and actually that's spreading into Canada. That really, again, I think underscores how we can all step up our acts of solidarity with each other. How, you know, one of the things I'm asking myself in this new world, the world that is quickly evolving around us or devolving around us, one of the things I ask myself is, what do I do if? What do I do if I see, acts of oppression breaking out between individuals? Like if I see a white supremacist hassling somebody on the street, what do I do? What do I do in situations that call for mass solidarity and non-participation in the system? What do I do? I'm starting to play that what if game a fair amount. In thinking about and talking with friends about plans. What happens if? And I think it's probably that time that we all need to be doing that. What happens if? We've talked the last several weeks on the show about historic analogies, times that we see in history where societies, where nations, where states have fallen into authoritarianism. And when I say fallen into, it sort of sounds like, whoopsie doodles, that was an accident. No one was looking and we fell down a giant pit. It's not actually how it goes, is it? It's actually carefully planned, thought out, laid out, and executed. And we are seeing that, right, around us daily. So what do we do when we see an authoritarian fascist state unfolding around us. We always look at those historical examples and say, well, if I was in Italy, if I were in Germany, if I were, I know that I would be XYZ, generally putting oneself in a fairly heroic setting, because we'd all like to think we'd do that. But what are we doing right now? Because I dare say this would be the time to be doing it. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. If you'd like to jump into the conversation, please do. That's 503-231-8187. You can also find us on Facebook. We are there, Positively Revolting. And you can find us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. So however you choose to get a hold of us, please do. We'd love to hear from you this morning and hear what is really catching your attention in the news. Another thing I really wanted to talk about this week is the resident of the White House. You know, I'm used to the dog whistles that have been a constant part of this administration that pushes racism, that pushes white supremacy, that pushes a narrative that is transphobic, that is homophobic, that marginalizes women, that further restricts women's access to sovereign decisions over their own bodies. That sort of thing. Okay, it's there. And it seems like, wow, if every time it happened, we sit around calling it out, we would not have any breath for anything else. But this week, it has, again, taken on a whole new level. And it's really not so much a dog whistle as a just resounding alarm that really you just got to see for what it is. I'm talking about Trump's tweet about the white South African farmers. There's so much that is wrong with that tweet. But basically, let's call it for what it is. There is no white genocide happening in South Africa. That he has, in fact, chosen to amplify a white nationalist message and amplify it globally. And play directly into the hands of those that say, the white supremacists, the Proud Boys, those folks that we've been seeing popping up on the West Coast tours and in Charlottesville, spreading their vile brand of hatred. It's, really a sop to them to say, yeah, keep going. You're on the right track because look, there's a white genocide happening and we need to do what we can, right? And that is terrifying that the resident of the White House is choosing to actually take that on, to amplify, like I said, that dog whistle into a full-on alarm. That is terrifying to me. How are you feeling about that? That we have a resident of the White House that seems to rule by fiat and tweet, right? You have Twitter tantrums at 3 a.m. suddenly putting out messages to his followers, to his supporters, and to the rest of us about what we can expect. That, again, is terrifying to me. And this happens actually the same week that we see one of his speechwriters fired for white supremacist ties. Not a big shock there, but I think important to underscore that this administration is fully interwoven with and a part of white nationalist movement. So that is something to consider. There is a article in the Washington Post, actually, that is Trump's pushing white nationalist ideas into the mainstream. White supremacists loved Trump's tweet about an imaginary white genocide in South Africa. I'm just going to go ahead and read from that article. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Call on in, join the conversation, and let me know what's on your mind this morning. I know I'm thinking a whole lot about the dumpster fire that is this administration, and how we cannot allow us to be lulled into that sense of complacency that this is just the new normal. I mean, heck, it's been nearly 2 years since the election. It's just the way things are now. I say nay. It is, in fact, the way things are. We cannot be in denial about that, but it's not normal. And we have to resist, and we have to find ways to effectively resist the white nationalist, white supremacist messaging, the hate-filled anti-immigrant messaging, the incredible harm done to the working class and those living in poverty, the poor, through the cruel tax reform. We also have to look at what we are doing internationally in supporting and selling arms to in factions around the world, supporting bombings of children in Yemen and that sort of thing. There is so much to talk about. Please do give a call now at 503-231-8187. So from the article from the Washington Post, when President Trump tweeted Wednesday night that he had asked Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to look into violence against and seizures of land from white farmers in South Africa, he wasn't just amplifying a narrative that he heard from Fox News host Tucker Carlson. Trump was also elevating a storyline that has floated around white supremacist blogs, podcasts, and online forums for years. And the president's tweet shows how these white supremacist ideas bubble up from the internet's darkest corners directly into the Oval Office. In 2015, Dylann Roof walked into a Bible study group at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina, listened quietly for an hour, and then opened fire, killing 9 people. A photo that later surfaced online showed Roof wearing a jacket sporting the flag of South Africa's apartheid regime. The 24-year-old South Carolinian clearly felt an affinity with white South Africans. That sentiment is common across the white supremacist universe. The neo-Nazi website The Daily Stormer has published hundreds of stories about the plight of white South African farmers. Users of the white supremacist site Stormfront have been going on about this issue for years, and white nationalist platforms on social media sites like Facebook are similarly devoted to the fate of South African whites. These narratives often portray the treatment of South African whites as a critical front in an imagined global fight against white people. If whites in South Africa are treated so poorly after handing over power to the country's black majority, the story goes, it's just a preview of what could happen in the rest of the world as more diverse voices are allowed into the political conversation. This fear has been given the name white genocide. So again, by Trump's tweet of yesterday, he is really centering and forwarding this mess of lies and white supremacist speech that has been bubbling in the underground for years. So now, you know, there he is centering it in American policy and it's certainly in American consciousness. What do you think about that? How are you going to spread truth in the face of lies? What is it that you are doing to, in fact, help to spread truth and understanding at a time when lies and division are really the official voice of the land? 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning to join us on the air, join in this conversation. There again is so much to talk about. You may have entirely other stories and ideas that you want to bring to the fore, please do. There is, again, like I said, so much going on. One of the other stories that has really caught my attention was the was Trump speaking to a rally in West Virginia, where he announced the repeal of Obama's clean energy reform, right? That he, even though the EPA admits this action, this proposed rollback of clean air, clean energy standards, could contribute to the deaths of 1,400 people a year, we're all for it, right? I mean, really, air? Who needs air? We need coal. Coal because coal brings jobs. Coal because coal is indestructible, says Trump. I mean, I don't know if anyone actually saw a little clip from that speech, but as he's talking about beautiful, clean coal, and he gets that kind of weird, dreamy look in his eye, he then goes on to say that, you know, these wars that probably we'll be getting into any minute now, those foreign powers, well, they could attack us. They can blow up windmills pretty easy, he said. He then talked about how they could really mess up pipelines and we wouldn't be able to get them fixed very quickly. Nope. And, oh, they could mess up solar really good. But you know what? He said, they can't do anything to coal. Coal is there. It's strong and it's indestructible. I'm dumbfounded, really, with that rationale. I mean, first of all, there's the logical fallacies of it. Like coal. Yeah, there's maybe some coal and it is in the ground, but it's still going to actually need infrastructure if you're going to utilize it, which we should not. So there's just so much actually wrong with his statements around beautiful, clean coal. 503-231-8187, your thoughts. I know that when we talk about air quality, as somebody who this week has been really compromised by the air quality here in Portland, which is really made bad by the forest fires that are kind of out of control, right? So this is all basically a part of climate change. This is the second year running that we have experienced this. Again, it's a new normal, but it's not something to get used to. It's something to see for what it is, a huge flashing warning sign to change our ways, right? We have climate scientists who have said for some time, we have already passed the tipping point. All we can do is mitigate harm. We have more scientists jumping onto that end of thinking this week as they say, well, we are rapidly approaching the tipping point and all we're going to be able to do is mitigate harm. And we've got a couple of scientists that say, oh, no, things are fine. Just keep going. Business as usual. Yep, that's the way to go. Clean, beautiful coal. So really coal. Not appropriate, right? The largest contributor of greenhouse gases in when it comes to our power, and one of the largest contributors of pollution in the air, such as mercury, etc. So this is, again, not a good move for the people, but in fact, a move wherein Trump is paying off the corporate supporters that put him in office. Let's go ahead and hear from you. Joseph, what do you have to say about it?
Hi. Hey, this is kind of along the same lines of the power elite that kind of messed things up. And here locally in Portland, whatever happened to Charlie Hale? You know, I kind of think that all the construction and contractors and all the building really started under his administration. I know we were ripe for getting plundered, but he just kind of folded up shop and took off and went for a cruise around the world for a year. Do you have any thoughts on that? I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah, thanks. No, I don't have any thoughts on where Charlie Hales went to. I haven't really kept up with Charlie. I know that during his first interaction with Portland city government. I will never forget seeing the graffiti scrawled on 21st Avenue in Northwest Portland, Charlie Hales is a lapdog of the developers. And I didn't know much about him then, but it kind of caught my eye. And certainly, I think we saw that play out during his tenure here. He was somebody who gave a lot of lip service to neighborhood empowerment and community empowerment. And then basically, I think, sold off Portland to the highest bidder, as most mayors have done over our history. So, and I did say most, perhaps not all. So that's, I guess, my thoughts on Charlie Hale this morning. I know, well, you know, currently we have a new problem in Ted Wheeler. And it's, I know there are, it's growing unrest around his completely ineffective leadership in meeting Portland's needs, actual Portland's needs, as opposed to serving basically the moneyed interests yet again, as we have seen over and again in Portland's history. So that's my thoughts on Charlie Hales and Portland City government right now. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Do give a call. We are running through quite a lot of stories this week that have caught my attention, and perhaps they've caught yours as well. I know that there continue to be acts of resistance to plug into. What are you doing to, in fact, help with the state of things? What are you doing to resist? What are you doing to make our community safer for the most marginalized amongst us? How are you creating acts of solidarity? Those are my questions. 503-231-8187. You can also, again, get us on Facebook. And that's Facebook. We are Positively Revolting there. Or you can also say get us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. However you choose to reach out to us, please do. And we'd love to hear what you have to say. And this morning, we'd love to hear what you have to say on the air at 503-231-8187. There actually is a lot to talk about when it comes to racism, when it comes to how we are again looking at our neighbors who our community members who may not have documentation. I wanted to actually talk about what's happening with the Dreamers. That there is an article from the Dallas News, actually, that showed about 55% of DACA recipients think at least once a day about being deported or are terrified that a family member will be deported. And that, you know, as you are trying to get through your life, that is a heavy, heavy thing to have to weigh in. When you're thinking about your future, when you're planning, you know, what you're going to do next month, to actually have to worry about whether you or a loved family member is actually going to be here in this country or deported, in some cases, to a country that you don't remember because maybe you've lived here your entire life and, you know, you're now in your 20s. That is a horrifying thing to have to live with every day. So how can we support all of our community members, whether they are DACA recipients, whether they have papers, whether they, you know, for whatever their status is, how can we support members of our community that are targeted and at risk? That's another question for you this morning, 503 231-8187. That's the number to call. And let's see, right now, let's go ahead and talk to Louisa. Good morning, Louisa. You're on the air. Hello, Louisa.
Hi.
Hello. You're on the air.
Oh, great. I am sitting up at the up on the Washington side of the Columbia River, because I was up at the Bridge of the Gods, right where the Pacific Crest Trail crosses the Columbia River and continues up. So this is the dividing line, I guess, of the Cascades, and I'm doing this to check out the air for the air pollution, because I've been in Portland with my grandchildren, and we've had to stay inside because of this pollution that you were mentioning about, or it was on the air. And it struck me that I should tell you why, and it's because I'm worried about the Columbia Generating Station that is the last nuclear power plant, and it's very underbuilt for the expected earthquake that has been uncovered a few years back. Only about 5 years ago, they found out there is a very deep 10-mile down earthquake that goes right under the Hanford site from Seattle. It's the South Whidbey Island fault line, and it goes from Seattle to the Wallowa Mountains and under the Cascades. And this was written up in Earth Island Journal. So I'm worried about fallout coming into Portland. And I was told that from a thing like Fukushima or a meltdown that leads to an explosion of the containment building, and then those particles go into the air, just like this smoke. And I wanted to figure out if it's going to break right here. So I'm watching the weather, and it's cloudy over here. And it wasn't when I left Portland last night. And so the fallout could reach Portland from that. And I think it should be shut down before an accident like that could happen. So that's kind of a tourism, ecotourism in the close to Portland area. Beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous out here in this early morning.
Well, I want to thank you for reminding us that exists, and how we all, you know, need to focus some attention on the fact that there are nuclear reactors, there's nuclear waste, there's a lot of toxic issues that we need to deal with in Washington, around Hanford, etc. And again, those issues just don't go away. We had the opportunity to talk to Sean Tinney the first couple weeks back now, when he was speaking for Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Mm-hmm. And again, it's important to think about what will happen to those sites when we are hit with the earthquake that geologists know is coming sometime between, you know, lunchtime and 200 years from now. And so it's no time like the present to figure that out, and to, you know, I don't know that we can make them safe, right? I think the genie's out of the bottle.
But there's
ways to make it safer.
Turn it off.
Yes, exactly. And then to figure out how to deal with what it's generated. Thank you very much for your call this morning.
Yeah. Okay. Have a great day.
You too. All right. Let's go ahead and talk to Cornelius. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing very well, thanks.
Good. Well, I had a little input on the climate change issue. It's not really input. It's more of a question, because I've never seen this aspect of transportation factored into how climate change is. But so we know that vehicles are outputting carbon emissions and so on and so forth all the time. But what about the fact that every one of these vehicles, which I've probably passed 5,000 plus cars this morning, every one of these is basically a 2-ton rock that's somewhere in the temperature range between lava and a geyser discharge. And we've got millions and worldwide probably billions of these on the road every day. This doesn't happen in nature, getting that much mass that hot on a regular basis. And what kind of a factor does that play in the climate? And have you known of a study of this?
I don't think I've ever heard of a study of that. I think that's interesting. You know, certainly we can look at factors we do know about, like beautiful clean coal, for example. You know, also the petroleum, the oil industry, all of the carbon-based energies, deforestation, you know, which releases carbon monoxide and takes away, you know, the ability to clean the air, and to generate oxygen. You know, we can look at all the factory farming practices. So we can look at all the things we do know and say, okay, we have to change some practices. Like yesterday would be great. Like 10 years ago would have been even better. But we really don't need to be going backwards like the leaders of many industries, certainly, and their friend in the White House are talking about these days. I thank you very much for the interesting question this morning.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, hard to say. I'm still really just reeling from Trump's ending the war on beautiful, clean coal. That's just, yeah, wow. Beautiful, clean coal. Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk to Mimi. 503-231-8187, the number to call. Join in this conversation. What's on your mind? We'd love to hear from you this morning. And now, good morning, Mimi. You're on the air.
Hi, Ani. Thanks for the show.
Yeah, for sure.
I wanted folks to know that we are starting a campaign to recall Ted Wheeler, and it's going to probably kick off on Wednesday at City Council, right outside the doors at 9 o'clock. So if people want to come and join us because they are, you know, in agreement with us that he's in over his head, and he's a danger to Portland, to all communities in Portland except the white wealthy communities and the developers in Portland, then come and join us for this recall. I know that I had mentioned it to you before, and it does look like it's going to happen. So I just wanted to get the word out there that I feel really strongly that Ted is going to kill one of us on the streets during protest. They tried to do that 2 weeks ago, and they almost succeeded when a flashbang was shot directly into a protester's head. So I can't allow him to remain in that seat without taking this next step to try to get him out of that chair.
Thank you very much for your work, Mimi. Is there anything else you'd want to say about that? How can people reach out and connect with you to support this effort if they're interested?
We're working on a website. It will probably be called something like Recall Ted Wheeler. And what I'd love to do is be able to put it on your Facebook page, the KBOO Facebook page, and let folks know that that's happening, and we'll be blasting it and talking to media about it. There's just so many issues that, as I said, he's in over his head. There's the houseless issue. There's the cop issue. There's the houseless cop issue.
And when you're talking about the houseless cop issue, you're talking about the fact that more than half of the arrests last year were actually police detaining homeless folks.
Exactly. And the daily terrorism by cops to our houseless community for them existing. You know, they're not allowed to exist. Anywhere they exist, the cops are going to be there to tell them you can't exist. So we're either going to arrest you, or we're going to move you. We're going to make your life hell until you give up. And I don't, you know, giving up for somebody on the street, wow, that's a low blow, right?
Right.
So, there's too many issues to allow Ted to continue one more day without trying to get him off that chair. And I hope that there's people out there who want to come and not look at it as, oh, well, you're never going to get the right amount of signatures. Oh, it's not going to work. You know what? The end goal isn't what matters right now. We have to do everything that we can to say that we are not going to tolerate this form of injustice for one more second, no matter what the end goal is. Because if we get rid of our own moral code, you know, that says we can't tolerate this, but we're going to, then we're done. And I'm not done.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that all of you who are listening who also aren't done, who understand what resistance, what perseverance means, you know, and doing the right thing means, will come and take part in this recall of Ted. And let's get somebody in there who has compassion, who understands the people of Portland, who understands the whole, who understands the circle, who understands what makes us a good people rather than a terrorist organization.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Mimi, for your work.
Thanks,
and keep us posted, and we'll keep other folks posted. That is the work of Community Radio. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Let's go ahead and talk with... Well, there'll be a moment. Let's go ahead and talk with Warren now. Good morning, Warren. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have a couple of things. I, as well as you, am sort of reeling from those Trump comments about coal when I first heard them and thought about how windmills could be toppled. And immediately I thought about, well, there's a lot of them at any one of these particular farms, and I don't really know how easy it would be for anybody to topple any more than one or two at a time, if they were to try to. And then the other thing about solar, you know, I just don't know about that either. But it just seems like if you can go ahead and do some sort of damage to the facilities that harness this kind of power, then why wouldn't somebody able to do damage to a coal fired power plant just the same?
Yeah, you know, the man made no sense. But again, this isn't new, right? And other, you know, authors have pointed out that if coal was actually indestructible, you couldn't mine it or burn it. It would just be this, you know, object on the planet that you could not interact with in any way, right? It's just, it's wacky, like most of the stuff he says.
It is. Sorry. And the other thing is that what we do also know is that the sun basically is indestructible, as well as is the wind. You know, what are they going to do to stop the wind? Build a wall to stop the wind from blowing, and how are they going to stop the sun from shining?
I think the Simpsons had an answer to that. But
are you there?
Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. My engine's kind of loud, and I've got my Bluetooth turned up as much as I can. And the other thing I wanted to say about, I think it wasn't the last caller, but the one before, and that is that I don't know too much about the heat that engines produce as being much of a contributing factor, but one thing that has been studied, I'm certain of, is that the removal of trees everywhere and big cities has caused these cities everywhere to become heat islands. So they're absorbing and putting out all of this heat that is then, again, being trapped by all the CO2 in our atmosphere.
Yep.
You know, and that is a significant factor in what's going on. I just wanted to add that to it.
All right. Hey, Warren, thank you so much about that. Thanks very much.
Anyway, hey, thanks for taking my call, too.
Absolutely. 503-231-8187. 10 minutes left. Go ahead and call in now if you would like to talk about your thoughts on news this week and how it is that we, A, are not in denial, right? I don't want us to be in denial and have every story that comes out of this administration or its local equivalencies, you know, be shocking to the conscience. I mean, they are, is the thing. They do shock the conscience, and they should shock the conscience. But we have to go ahead and accept the fact that this is the world we are living in. It's not at all normal. How do we take the steps needed to get out of this world and to get about the business of creating a better one a world that is actually economically just, racially just, a world without misogyny, a world without homophobia and transphobia, a world without poverty. How do we do that? There are so many people that at this point are looking at Trump as the great evil, that if we only got rid of Trump, then we could get back to being a great country again. And I just got to say, we weren't actually a great country before 2016, that we have had significant issues, right? That that the racism, the murderous police practices have been going on unabated throughout our country's history, that we have a huge problem with houselessness and poverty, that we have a huge problem with rape culture and misogyny, that we have a huge problem with environmental destruction. And all of this stuff did not start when Trump got inaugurated. And it's nice to blame it all on him, because in fact, he is the devil. Okay, fine, I've said it. But there are so many other factors that play into this, that it is so important not to lose sight of the fact that we really have to go deep. No matter who is in the White House, we have to be about the business of building that new world together. The idea, and then I've seen this on so many comments at the end of so many articles, they always say that that's really just a way to ruin your day. Never read the comments. But I see this in so many comments. I see this in so much social media, that we have to get rid of Trump so we can get back to the country we had that was, going the right direction. It may have been going the right direction, but it was doing so very, very slowly, glacially slowly, actually, and not at all sustainably. And really, people still dying of racist attacks, people still dying from lack of health care, people still dying from basic issues of poverty. And so, how do we, in fact, change the systems? How do we, in fact, change our world to be sustainable, to value each other? How do we do that? That's one of the questions I'm asking you this morning. Call on in. I'd love to hear from you. What are you working on? Because we all have a little piece of the pie, and we all, maybe it's a piece of the puzzle. That's actually the one I was going for. Metaphors. We all have a little piece of the puzzle. What's yours? What are you working on? It's time for us all to be active, doing something that feels right to you, to make this world a better place. I wanted to actually go back to a couple of interesting things about Trump's speech on coal in West Virginia. Again, playing strongly to his base. The poor of West Virginia, the miners that have been looking at, needing to maybe not mine anymore. It's a destructive practice. It's environmentally destructive. It is harmful to the climate. It takes down mountains, all of that kind of good stuff. Let's actually go ahead and look at some of Trump's claims in that speech. And this is from the New York Times. I started out this article actually already when I quoted them as saying if coal was truly indestructible, you couldn't mine it or burn it. And the notion that coal-fired plants are somehow trouble-free and secure is also mistaken. In June, Westar Energy shut down Kansas's largest power plant after an equipment failure led to the deaths of two employees. And an industrial accident shut down a Florida plant in 2017. In World War II, British bombers targeted the coal plants and stockpiles that powered the steel mills in the Ruhr Valley in Germany. Trump argued that coal is more reliable than solar and wind power systems, which do not generate when the sun does not shine and the wind dies down. This argument ignores the efforts to develop innovative energy storage systems to smooth out the curves of supply and demand. He also went on to say, we are back. The coal industry is back. New York Times fact-checking says this claim is exaggerated. Mr. Trump lauded his administration's attempts on many fronts to roll back environmental policies from President Barack Obama's administration that encouraged the transition to renewable energy sources, including this week's announcement of a proposed replacement for Obama's signature Clean Power Plan. But despite all of Trump's efforts, the industry remains under heavy economic pressure from cheap natural gas and the rise of renewable energy. Coal consumption has continued to decline, and production, too, was lower in the first 3 months of 2018 when compared to last year. The economy added about 2,200 jobs in the coal sector from February of 2017, Mr. Trump's full first month in office, to July 2018, a modest increase of about 4.3%. So, again, we are seeing that it is false claims. Let's just say false claims. How do we know Trump is lying? His mouth moved. It's true. Let's go ahead and talk to Keene. Good morning, Keene. You are on the air.
Good morning. I had a question. A few callers back, the woman talked about trying to get rid of Wheeler as mayor. I wonder, along as a result of this couple weekends ago, the demonstrations, if anyone has thought any ideas about what we should do about our new police chief, who was just so blatant on the Lars Larson show about how she feels about anybody protesting.
Yeah, that is a question we have to keep asking. And thank you for bringing that up. Last week, we really focused on that. Her statements on Lars basically saying, you know, that folks coming together to protest white supremacy were looking for a fight and the cops brought it. Wow. You know, I mean, again, the naked abuse of power in that statement is phenomenal. And we cannot lose sight of Danielle Outlaw's perspective in the struggle, just like we can't lose sight of Wheeler's complacency. And thanks very much for your call and bringing that up again. And with that, I just want to let you know that coming up this morning at 9 o'clock, One Land, Many Voices, will be talking about the Freedom Flotilla to Gaza. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views talks to the program manager at Edible Corvallis Initiative about environmental stewardship. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, it's Pacific Underground, with interviews, commentaries, and real-time coverage of issues affecting Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Northwest. All of these programs are made possible by member support. Please, if you are not yet a KABU member, please take care of that right now. Go to KABU.fm and click on Donate. Your contributions keep KABU strong and activated. Your participation in community radio is really a thing of wonder. Please do it. It's KABU.fm. Hit the Donate button. And with that, I am just about out of time. You know, things are pretty weird and things are pretty dire. It's important to stay together, practice solidarity like our lives depend on it, and see through the propaganda that would seek to incite racial hatred, rape culture, misogyny, homophobia, all of that. Know that together we are stronger and we have to form alliances from the ground up. Next week, we'll be talking with Andrea Williams from CAUSA about a ballot measure that actually sends the green light to racial profiling. And again, it's an anti-immigrant racist ballot measure 105 that we have to know about and we have to defeat. And so, Andrea Williams from CAUSA will be my guest next week. Take care and stay positively revolting.
celebration of our 50th anniversary, KBOO is teaming up with the Mississippi Records Music and Film Series. KBOO will be hosting Coal Miner's Daughter on Wednesday, September 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. This film from 1980 chronicles the life of country singer Loretta Lynn. Sissy Spacek brings sincerity and depth to her portrait of Loretta and does her own singing in the movie, as does Beverly D'Angelo in the role of Patsy Cline. Tommy Lee Jones also delivers one of his best performances. Again, that's Coal Miner's Daughter on Wednesday, September 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, I was born to coal miner's daughter.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Short Docs on Sunday, September 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Mission Theater in Portland. PDX Short Docs will show multiple short documentaries by local filmmakers, followed by an audience Q&A. There will be films about the Me Too movement, the Palindrome World Championship, an urban farm, the Oregon coast, and much more. Again, that's PDX Short Docs on Sunday, September 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Mission Theater, 1624 Northwest Gleason Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. It's just after 9 a.m. Coming up on One Land, Many Voices, the Freedom Flotilla to Gaza. At 10, Valley Views talks to the program manager at Edible Corvallis Initiative.